Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Well, welcome to Elder Talk. Good afternoon, and I think today we're going to live up to our promise to you, our loyal listeners. We make it have a commitment on this show to try to have topics that we think will have great practical value to you. And in addition, we hope that the show is interesting and entertaining. And it's not always possible to unite those goals, but I think today we have done that. And what we've chosen to talk about today is a topic that comes up, I would argue, more than anything else. Wouldn't you agree with this statement, Susan?
I would. Long-term care is a big issue that many, many people are facing now or will face in the future.
Yeah. So this topic is one in which people are continually coming to us and raising the issue of how do I afford my long-term care? And it is an issue. I mean, when we think of many of the major expenses we have in life, there's an answer to those. And many of those answers are available through programs such as Medicaid, unemployment. I mean, there are a variety to answers to catastrophic scenarios. And in many cases, though, there are strong private sector answers. And I personally tend to favor private sector solutions. But I realize that there are occasions when perhaps the market hasn't produced what's needed. I think Medicaid is an example of many people's conclusion that they can't simply pay for long-term care costs on their own. And many of them have been dissatisfied with those private sector solutions. So instead, they try to qualify for Medicaid. And I don't discourage that. As a matter of fact, many of our clients, that is their objective, is how do I qualify for Medicaid? But it's not easy. And you have to be, in some sense, the word broke, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So we wanted today to focus on what solutions might exist in the private sector by which people can pay for the long-term care. So we're not going to spend a lot of time focusing on Medicaid during this show. I mean, we've done that before, and I promise you we'll do that in the future. But today I want to think more about what are the private sector solutions by which people may meet, you know, this elephant in the room when it comes to planning for that last third of your life. Toward that end, Susan, introduce our wonderful guest.
We have a guest today, and her name is Diane Finisteed, and she has over 20 years in the insurance industry and started her career as a long-term care specialist and is now a national trainer and district specialist. She serves on many area boards, including the St. Louis Home Care Alliance, Services and Opportunities for Seniors, and is a sought-after speaker for many local and state retirement associations. Now, she brought along another friend from hers and part of her team. It's part of Team Finisteed, and her name is Carrie Gormley. So we have two guests for you today, and Carrie has 12 years' experience in long-term care insurance and is a member of the Senior Resources Options. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So those of you listening, you may think that this sounds like a subject of insurance and this might not be very interesting. Hang with us here. We're going to focus on private sector solutions generally, but I think that you'll find it very interesting, the various products that are available. But let's set up this conversation a little more generally. We know that one option people have as they age is to pay for these costs out of pocket. And there are some people who self-insure. And mm-hmm. and if they have, for example, in excess of $2 million in available funds through some liquid resource, then it's not inconceivable for them to plan to cover those costs. Keep in mind, we're very easily talking about $300 a day costs, $9,000 a month, $10,000, $12,000. Certainly in St. Louis, we know that there are facilities where it's $12,000 a month mm-hmm. for long-term care. We don't know, none of us do, how long that period will be. Is it going to be 24 months? Is it going to be 12 months? Is it going to be 60 months? You know, we don't really know. And so we're, to some extent, having to handicap this question, meaning make a projection, and as a result of those conclusions, plan accordingly. And, of course, plans can go sideways. And when they do, is there a emergency scenario for which there's a solution? But many people will say, look, I'm going to go bare on this. meaning I'm going to just deal with these costs out of pocket when they arise. But some people, that's simply not an option. And as a matter of fact, I'd be willing to argue that for most of our listeners, that's simply not an option. And it, I would argue to reject entirely the solution of saying, look, I'm going to go bare, I'm going to assume risk, and yes, I have some resources, but I definitely cannot afford to use those resources. I have plans for those legacies for my children and grandchildren. And so you're simply assuming a risk that you would regard as catastrophic if you're wrong. I don't think that's the proper way to approach this. I think that, that in that case, you should consider some of the solutions we're talking about here. So let's take it as kind of an operating assumption here that for most of the people listening to this show, they simply cannot afford to pay out of pocket a substantial period of time in which they're in long-term care. So toward that end, Carrie, Diane, talk to us about how you approach this subject when you're working with a client. And your practice or your business focuses heavily on serving seniors. So this is a very senior-focused insurance company that sells a variety of insurance products. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But we want to focus today on the long-term care. So tell us how you approach this conversation with your clients.
Well, I think the main thing is that most clients, when they come to us, they have experienced it some way, somehow, within their own family. And right now, still the topic of long-term care is not one that is openly discussed unless you find out that someone else has shared in that experience as well. And then it's a matter of saying to yourself, is this something that can happen to me? And once you've come to that realization, after you've taken care of a family member, be it your spouse or your mother or your father or another loved one or someone who's close to you, and you've seen how your own life has changed because of it, some because it does change your life because you're loving that person and it's out of love that you're giving to that person, but then you can't give to other areas of your life. Like your career, it might start affecting that. It might start affecting how often you can work. It might start affecting your relationships with your own kids. And they realize this is something that can happen to me. And so they want another solution.
Yeah, and you raise a good point here. And that is what many people do as an alternative. And that's to rely on these hidden costs. And suggestions are that clearly more than 50% of the costs, substantially more than 50% of the costs in our economy for long-term care are borne by family members, friends and family members, but especially family members.
Exactly.
And this cost goes undetected in the statistics to a great extent because it's hard to measure. But there's no question that in the scenario you're describing, you know, these are your children, they call them the sandwich generation. They're mm-hmm. probably kids, you know, who have kids. Mm-hmm. And yet they're determined to give their time and their efforts and to do all they can to help their parents to whom they're devoted. But what a price this extracts from them.
Truly, it's one where they'll say, oh, I do have a built-in caregiver. My granddaughter, she can take care of me. And I'll say, oh, your granddaughter, your grandson, are they in school? Do they work? What is their life like? And sometimes they will be in school and they'll stop school. And then they'll become that permanent caregiver. That is why one of the main reasons for the under 65 insurance to get out of that tax penalty, one of those reasons is if you're taking care of a family member, then you're out of that tax penalty in 2018. So even our government is recognizing that it's happening not just to the first generation after the generation that's affected, but the second generation. And it goes on and on from there because your life becomes on pause. And then as we discuss this with our clients, and Carrie and I have discussed this a lot, that our clients will say to us, they'll realize, you know, I don't want to be a burden on my kids, because they think that the way that they would be a burden is what they've experienced. They have no idea the types of things that can happen without that particular experience and going through it themselves, be it, is it someone that needs to help them walk? Is it someone that needs to help them cook? Is it someone that needs to help them bathe? Are they able to lift them? Are they able to do the physical labor that sometimes is required? And yeah. it can be so depleting on whoever that person is.
So let's talk about, though, give a sense of proportion to what the magnitude of the expenses can be. If we're talking about at-home care, and many people, of course, are determined to have care at home if possible, to age in place is their objective. So the last thing they want typically is to be in some sort of institutional environment. But we know at some point that may be necessary. We know those costs can easily run like $300 a day.
Mm-hmm.
But what are the costs if you stay at home? And at some point, that could be a lot more expensive than $300 a day if you're talking about 24/7 in which you're doing, you know, you're having much of this sophisticated care that's occurring in a home environment for which there are none of these economies of scale, none of the efficiencies that would normally be available in an institution. So, in fact, if you are determined at all costs to stay at home, you can end up spending a lot more. But let's assume a less extreme example. Let's assume that we have somebody who, similar to what you're describing, they're at home and they need care, assistance with what might be considered unskilled care. Senior home helpers, for example, or home health aides, they're called various things. It's not unusual for them to charge, what, $22, $24 an hour? Is that kind of the going rate?
That's correct. Anywhere from 18, which is typically the Medicaid rate, to $25 an hour.
So you can see how that math adds up in a pretty short order, and especially if you're needing them there, what, 8 hours a day?
Absolutely.
16 hours a day?
Because gone are the days where you would have someone come in and live in your home and then also sleep there because they require an 8 hours of sleep. And so you do have to have two shifts in our state now. And most of the home health care companies, they have three shifts.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
you have a different set of people coming into your home. And it's a different flow with that. So that relationship has to be very strong.
And these are franchises with which many people are familiar, senior helpers, and there are literally 100+, I'm sure, these franchises around the country.
Yes.
Which speak to the demand for these sorts of services. So many people, recognizing the cost of this at $22-$24 an hour, depending on the budget that's available to the loved one, they might in fact say to their children or to their grandchildren or others that they ask them to perform some of these tasks. Even if they don't ask them, perhaps they sense the need and they step forward voluntarily. So they're volunteers in this service, but it doesn't change the price that is extracted for
Absolutely.
That care.
Because what happens when you need to have in-home health care, your doctor can order it for you, and it's that you need to have help with two activities of daily living. So all the things that we do when we wake up in the morning, bathing, dressing, toileting, transferring, continence, and eating. So just think of everything that we do when we first wake up in the first 15 minutes, all those things.
Are the ADLs.
Yes.
And let's clarify for the listeners what that is. Activities of daily living. And there are five of them, but then there's this instrumental activities, which is another five or seven.
Yes.
But it's really the things you identified, the things associated with eating, getting out of bed, transferring from chair to bed, continence.
Exactly.
So these things, if you can't do a certain number of these are what trigger the provisions for qualification for Medicaid, for qualification for terms
Medicare.
Mm-hmm. For Medicare, mm-hmm. and for qualification for terms in an insurance policy.
Absolutely. And so it's interesting when we go out and talk to our clients, and Carrie, you know, please add this, we will tell them that Medicare has changed, especially in our area here in St. Louis, over the course of the last 2 years. And currently, right now, what we see for Medicare skilled care, if your doctor has ordered it or if you're in the hospital and you leave the hospital and you receive the Medicare skilled care, or you receive it once you leave a rehab facility and it's ordered then, it's very minimal, even though it reads, which is so bizarre, I think, and Carrie can attest to this too, that it says it's 100% of Medicare approved will be covered. And you think 100%, wow, that's a lot. No, it's not. It's misleading because what we see right now is 2 days a week for 28 minutes is what the Medicare will provide, and that is for a physical therapist. And sometimes, very unusually, you will see an occupational therapist, or we used to have what was called a bath aid, and right now that's kind of like a unicorn. You've heard of it, but they don't really exist. So it's one where when we go out to clients and we say 28 minutes twice a week, they come into your home, it's a 21-day episode. Even that RN that comes out the first time and sets up your medications, and they might come out more if you have wounds or infusions. All that other time around those 28 minutes twice a week, you have to have someone there.
And let's clarify something, though, too, with Medicare, and that's that Medicare is only for purposes of treatment.
Correct.
In other words, things that are toward your improvement as opposed to simply your maintenance, which when we think of long-term care, generally we're talking about chronic conditions, chronic care. There's not a plan for the recovery from an injury or illness.
Right.
And so that is the real branch off of Medicare from providing services for people, particularly in their home, if they don't meet these more limited conditions. So let me shift to Carrie for a minute. So, Carrie, whenever you're talking to someone and they're saying to you, maybe they're 50, maybe there's somebody who's experienced these things we've just talked about, and they're saying to you, well, okay, I get it. I need to buy consider some insurance. And I am concerned that I might need something if I'm at home, and I'd much rather be getting benefits at home if possible versus being in a facility. What do you suggest regarding the amount of care and coverage I should have? What do you say to them? How much should they buy?
Well, it's definitely a big difference if you're looking at care at home, and that's probably the most misunderstood or miscalculated figure, and that, and you spoke to it, you know, if you're looking at 24-hour care, you can end up spending in a year or a month double for 24-hour home care than you would being in a facility. But that seems to be what people want. When I ask somebody, I say, well, where do you want to be when you have one of the instances? And they, nine times out of ten, or nine and a half times out of ten, I want to be at home.
So they may say to you, well, if my goal is to stay at home, is there an insurance policy that will give me so many hours or days or coverage, and how do policies express this?
Well, that's where we've really opened up our awareness and the industry has really stepped forward to come up with multiple types of plans to fit those needs. There's a lot more options out there than just traditional long-term care insurance that a lot of people are not aware of. You can supplement your existing plan or buy standalone home health only plans. And home health only plans.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And there's you can supplement you kind of have two different approaches. You might have a client that already has a long-term care plan in place, but the qualifications for care are different for a long-term care plan versus a short-term care plan. And the biggest difference there, as you mentioned earlier, is it has to be a chronic condition for a long-term care. So we will supplement or just do standalone short-term care policies that have slightly different qualifications, whereas does not have to be a chronic condition. They just have to have qualify based on being unable to perform like two of the six activities of daily living. So they really work well together. And that's something that Diane and I have both been doing a lot of, is going back to some of our original long-term care policy holders and explaining these holes that Medicare has created and filling them in with these additional policies.
Well, and let me echo something you said and emphasize it, is that the policies that were available just 15 years ago were dramatically different. I mean,
They were
in some ways, it's funny, it's schizophrenic. In some ways, the early year policies, especially those in the 90s, mm-hmm. were incredibly good. As a matter of fact, to some extent, too good to have continued
to be true. But they are true for those people.
Yeah,
do not get rid of your policies.
Continued to be true. Right. And some of them went out of businesses. I mean, there are a number of the companies. Some mm-hmm. are still, you should be concerned if you've gotten notice that your policies have been spun off into a special entity that's a subsidiary of the main company because they're trying mm-hmm. to figure out solutions to get these obligations off their books
mm-hmm.
Because they just made miscalculations early on. And the actuarial math, in fairness to them, they couldn't have foreseen the sort of massive increases in costs, the new technology, the new medications and whatnot that are available today. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't have projected those costs well. So they were wonderful in those early days, but many of them are no longer there, period.
And you raise something that's very interesting, and it's worth pointing out to people that if they have a long-term care policy right now and they do receive a rate increase, oftentimes there will only be four different choices that you can make. They'll say you can receive non-forfeiture, you can get all of the money back that you've put in because they have this new rate increase, or they'll say you can have a two-year plan or a three-year plan or a four-year plan, especially if you went in there with a five-year mm-hmm. plan. They show you four
different
things.
Just like with life insurance often, you'll have these options.
Right. But then the thing is, when we meet with our clients, they'll say, well, which one do we choose? And they don't realize they have 200 choices. Those are just four choices that the company has tried to just make it a bite size and something that someone can understand easily, when in actuality they have many choices
within that same company.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So when we call that company and we say, well, what can we do with this long-term care plan, and can we change the elimination period, can we change how many years the plan would pay out, can we change the amount of payment that would be the ultimate payment, the max payment,
mm-hmm.
and all those things, can we change the inflation period? All those things can change the policy options that someone has. You're not locked into just four.
So people who have policies in place now, don't just drop those without going to see a professional such
Correct.
As you,
Absolutely.
Carrie or Diane. Definitely do not drop it without talking to a professional.
Do not drop it.
So I still want to come back and press you on the both of you on this question. So I'm a person sitting out there, potentially of our listeners. We're concerned about being able to get some benefits that will qualify us to receive those at home.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to imagine, as all of us must, because we don't know for sure, how many hours might I need? And let's assume that they want to allow for maybe the possibility of up to 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Is it affordable for them to find insurance that would pay for unskilled home care, which we've projected at approximately $22-24 an hour now, for them to pay for that through insurance? And what might it run? Can you
Absolutely.
Give us an example?
Absolutely. It runs the gamut. And Carrie's shaking her head right here. It runs the gamut. So what we do is we look at, and in the industry, we are no different from the industry and what the industry says for us all to do. And that is to say that we cannot change someone's lifestyle with a solution that we're going to present. If it changes someone's lifestyle, it's not the right solution.
You mean lowers it or raises it?
It doesn't diminish it.
Okay. And ideally it would raise it.
But one of the things that we have really enjoyed when we talk to our clients, and they already have the long-term care, and we are filling in that gap, or even those that don't have that gap, you in our state with a policy for home health care, there's a policy available where if you spend $50 a year out of your pocket on medications, and you can show that that original cash price would be $425. That's within a calendar year, your calendar. So let's say I signed up right now. So I'm looking at September to September, and I can show, oh, yeah, I've spent $50 on medications, and it would have cost $425 without this insurance. And I wanted to have approximately $112,000 of in-home care benefits, $300 a day for skilled care, and then that would be for a year or close to a year, 360 days. Or I want, and that doesn't have to be consecutive. You could take 3 days this week and 2 days next week and stretch it out, because that's the difference between short-term and long-term. A short-term plan says 360 days. A long-term plan says over 360 days. And it doesn't mean that you have to do it consecutively with that 360.
But can you not simply get a policy? I know these policies exist, so I want you to speak to it a little bit. Where someone wants a certain budget available per month,
yes,
and it's expressed per day, mm-hmm, as a budget that's available for home care,
mm-hmm,
and they want that to maybe be inflation adjusted. It's probably a good idea. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
So is it realistic to afford something that would allow you to have at home care that might cost? I mean, let's say 20. We'll use 20 bucks for easy math. And we won't say 10 hours. That's $200 a day for home care. But let's pause for a minute. Can you get a policy at for home care for $200 a day?
Yes.
Yes. And so in my scenario that I was sharing, with that policy that would give you $112,000 of in-home care benefits, just that one policy, if you are spending that money on your RX, which most people are, you get a rebate back. And it's $600 that the company gives you in our state. And
so that would be about $9,000 a month.
Right.
Approximately.
Exactly. And so someone who is 85 years old can get this policy for the net cost is less than a dollar a day. And it's amazing to know that. And there's another company that has tried to model after it. So combined together in our state, you can have $278,000 of in-home care, and it doesn't change your lifestyle to have it.
So you would think that there would be a point where costs would start coming down, meaning that you are old enough as an applicant to where, if you use your example, you're looking at someone who's 85 years old and they're applying for long-term care costs, and they have a lifetime ceiling, perhaps. I mean, surely at some point, while we see costs going up for long-term care, if you acquire a policy at 45 versus 65, right? You know that if you're 65, you can easily pay maybe $1,000 a month, potentially,
yeah,
or at least 70, you could pay $1,000 a month. But there's a point at which that curve starts down, right?
Right. It's funny. You reminded me of a client that I was with 2 weeks ago, and I said, no, you're 85. We got to get this policy for you. And he said, okay, I think it makes sense to me, Diane. I think that I'll go with that. And he said, and I said, well, that's good. I said, how long do you think you're going to live? He said, I'm going to live until Channel 5 gives me a lifetime supply of grape jelly, because I have just broken all the Smucker's records. Laughing, and I think he was really convinced that he was going to be that guy.
He was the one.
Yeah, I think that's what's keeping him living.
Well, you know, and you never know. I mean, you can be 85 and you get, you know, there are certain assumptions about what your lifespan will be at that much, and I don't know, mm-hmm, what the actuarial tables say. If somebody's 85, are they projected to live another 10 years?
It depends on the medications that they take. It depends on their health. And let's talk about that for a second. Because short-term health care for in-home care has underwriting that is not as, it's not as scrutinizing as the underwriting for traditional long-term care.
And the long-term care you've defined already as being beyond 360 days, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So when you get into underwriting, and I know Carrie can speak to this, you know, what they're looking for, because we share a funny story about how underwriting has worked, and I'll share one of them. I cornered Carrie at a professional women's meeting, and I knew this was before we started working together. together, I knew she was a whiz with all the new plans with the long-term care. And I had written some for a very large company, and they were coming back. And I thought, oh, I just need to talk to Carrie Gormley, and she'll know exactly what to do. And I was sharing this with Susan before, and I cornered Carrie. She didn't really realize what I was doing. She just thought we were going to chat. She didn't know that I had an agenda. So I said, Carrie, what am I doing wrong with sending these clients in for long-term care with this underwriting? I keep on getting rejections. What is it? And Carrie just looked at me very nonchalantly. She said, well, did you write the brag letter? Did you brag about them? And I said, what? What are you talking about? She said, oh, my goodness, Diane, you have got to write down things about them. You've got to let them know how active they are, all their hobbies that they have.
So this is important. This is important.
Very important.
So you're saying that the agent that you use can go to bat for you.
Yes, and be your advocate.
And can make
Absolutely.
The difference between being... This isn't a coldly numerical decision that some actuarial with green shades is making in a back office.
Underwriters are people. And I try to paint the picture of the clients that I'm sending to the underwriter in the cover letter, which is the first thing that they read.
Letter.
Before they get into it, because they don't know the people, they haven't seen the people, and to try to give them a more personal connection. And I've just found that successful. It was a piece of advice that was given to me early on in the business that you have to, make your clients known, and that will set them apart from a lot of the other applicants. It can make a difference.
Well, and let's be honest, we've all known 65-year-olds who act about 85, and then we've known 85-year-olds mm-hmm. who act like they're 55.
Yeah, and how would the actuary in the back room with the green shade, how would they know that?
Right.
And it is an important factor. It's not simply the lab tests mm-hmm. and the physical tests, et cetera. Let's take a break. Then I want to come back, and I want to talk about really a little bit what we're talking about now, but I want to deal with it more directly. To what extent might people be told that they can't qualify for long-term care when they do apply? Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back. We're back with two wonderful guests with Diane Insurance St. Louis, right? Diane Fenstead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And your colleague, Carrie. Carrie, what's your last name?
Gormley.
Okay, so we've been talking about specifically health insurance, though your company provides a variety of insurance that's very senior-focused. This is what we recognize our listening audience is for the most part over age 65, so we try to focus on things that will be of value to our listeners. And before we went into the break, we were talking about the fact that, yes, people would like to have long-term care insurance. They realize that Medicaid is often difficult to qualify for. Many of our listeners aren't rich enough to where they can be indifferent about what these costs will be, nor are they poor enough to be confident that they'd qualify for long-term care. So as a result, they're thinking, how do we pay for this? So among the things that I think people are concerned about when they think about long-term care insurance is two things. One is, will I have enough coverage to provide for the reasonable cost of care, first at home, because that's the optimistic scenario, and then secondarily in some sort of long-term care facility. And then the other issue, though, is, apart from affordability, is can I qualify? And we hear stories about people who may be in their 60s and they have – I heard a story from a guy who said he had a bad knee and he didn't qualify for long-term care insurance. And I don't know the details of that, but let's talk about the difficulty that our listeners might have if they decide to try to get this insurance. And let's assume they're in their 60s by the time they make this decision.
So the younger you are, the lower the cost. The healthier you are, the better it is for the underwriting. So when we write those brag letters, it is very important that the life jumps out of the page, as Carrie has said to me. Would you accept this person into a pool of people so that this pool is going to remain a healthy pool? And that's what we strive to do when we write that letter. And then when we express ourselves within the application and let them know that they may have diabetes or they may have had a surgery, but that surgery is now being followed and they have followed every step and they have followed it with their doctors and they have complied with everything. And that's very important to get across, because if you just put it into a box, diabetes, as a diagnosis, and you're not saying, well, their levels and their sugar levels are monitored, they've been taking their medications the correct way and the correct dosage, it doesn't go over to the underwriting team.
Well, I can accept, and you persuaded me, and incidentally, it's wonderful to hear, and our listeners should take note of a point that was made before we went into the break, and that's that the particular agent that you have who's acting on your behalf can influence this outcome. So I accept that. Tell me, though, what are examples of things that are going to be very problematic in terms of qualifying for long-term care insurance?
Anything to do with more that the underwriting is totally kind of opposite with long-term care and life insurance, and a lot of people think it's the same. So with long-term care, they're more concerned about like mobility issues. They're more concerned about the technical term is morbidity versus mortality. So
that's an important point.
Yeah, and so they're not actually as concerned about certain health conditions where you might, have a short, quick lifespan. They're more concerned about chronic.
Your ability to get around.
And probably the biggest concern are going to be cognitive impairments. So things like dementia, Alzheimer's. So there's always going to be some type of usually at least a phone interview where they're going to ask all kinds of goofy questions like count back and who's the president. And they're different for everybody. But cognitive impairment, as anyone who's had experience with a family member or friend, those are the issues where you can need care for a much more extended period of time.
Now, do you all provide an answer sheet for your applicants?
I wish.
A cheat sheet?
I wish.
These Alzheimer questions.
The questions are different for everyone.
But it leads to what is in your medical index bureau. And a lot of people do not know what a medical index bureau is. And it's basically like a credit report on our health. And so Mary and I go out to our clients. They sign a waiver of release that their medical records are going to go to underwriting, and then they'll be reviewed. And so if there's anything in those medical records that maybe they are not aware of, that can be a shocker. So I did have one client that, and Carrie knows these clients as well, because I looked to her and said, what can we do? Unbeknownst to him, his family had reported that he might have a cognitive issue. And it was because he was ignoring everything his son wanted to say to him. He just didn't want to talk to his son. And so his son said to his doctor, I think he has a cognitive issue. And it went into his medical record. So it took us a year to remove that from his medical record.
So these are tips that our listeners should take note of. They should want to know what is in their medical records, because there could be things that are there that are just kind of comments. Things that
exactly.
were not the result of any specific test.
Mm-hmm.
It may have even been something that our listeners raised. They may have asked about, gee, I'm forgetting things, and just out of over concern. And so it goes into the record. Mm-hmm. Patient's concerned about
exactly.
memory.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Or they might say, I feel a little foggy. I have a little bit of anxiety. And that can be interpreted many different ways by a medical professional.
Yeah.
And you could see how a doctor or physician would note that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of want them to, in case there is something later down the road, I want them to say, oh, yeah, this started here, and to follow up with it. So you can see how that makes sense, that they might put it in there, but it could come back to haunt you.
Absolutely. And it definitely has come back to haunt us.
So then whenever we're looking at someone's ability to qualify, so if they had, like this example I gave you, again, I don't know what the issue was, but you can imagine a scenario where there's an issue relating to a knee.
Yes.
That could cause you to not qualify for this long-term care?
Well, it's one where they're looking to see, are there any upcoming surgeries? So maybe this particular knee was a situation where in the record they might have put there's a possibility of upcoming surgery. And then that could have been a knockout for one of the underwriting questions for one of the companies. And all underwriting is not created equally. with the companies. Mm-hmm. That's why we carry so many different companies. So,
so if you get a no from one, you're saying it definitely should not dissuade you from applying to a variety.
Correct.
Absolutely. And sometimes a no is not a no, it's a not now. Try again in 6 months.
And so some things, when you show a period of time that you've not had it come up and you reapply, then they would be okay with
correct.
It?
Correct. Like using the simple example of the knee, well, then let's say that person got a knee replacement, was fully recovered after a period of time. They might then be able to reapply. So if we get somebody who is declined, we're going to find out why, and then we're going to ask, is this a permanent decline, or is there a waiting period or something that you're looking for before you would reconsider? And not everybody asks that question either, which is very important.
What percentage of your applicants are refused? I mean, is it a large percentage, or is it just a really pretty small percentage?
And let me ask, although on top of that too, so what percentage are declined, but also what percentage get, is there a standard rating, like an insurance, you can be substandard or standard where you
yes.
have higher rates?
Yes.
Is there a categorization like that as well? In answer to Susan, or adding that to Susan's question, what do you say?
For long-term care insurance, there can be a standard rating. There can be a preferred rating, depending upon the company. And it's one where, with Carrie and I, once they have made that decision, and they, number one, when we opened the show, I said it's they realize it's something that can happen to them, and they want a solution. They also realize that it's the greatest risk that they face. They've covered all the other risks. And Susan and I were talking about that during break, that they've covered their house, they've covered their car, they've covered their life. The only other thing that can happen that would make them spend all their money that they've saved or earned is a catastrophic illness. And when they realize that, then they are in a situation where they say, what are my other options? And we explore all those other options that you mentioned. Could it be Medicaid? Could it be that you pay for this out of your pocket? Could it be that you have built-in caregivers within your family? Or do you want to have a long-term policy? And once they decide that they want a long-term policy, it's a matter of making sure that that policy doesn't change their life to have it, and so that their stream of income continues to happen, and we're scrutinized over that by the companies.
So back to Susan's question then, how often, give us a sense for how frequent it is that an applicant will be declined?
Well, I've heard, I mean, the percentage-wise is higher the older the age group. So if you're looking at the age group over 65 and mid to late 60s, it can be about a 50% decline mm-hmm. rate.
Yeah.
And obviously when you're in the younger ages, it's less just because of the health. So that's why we know that going in. So that's why we always present, hey, this is our first option, but we have a plan B and a plan C if this doesn't work.
Yeah. And so I think that's one of the most important takeaways from this show is that if you're first refused, try again and be sure you have mm-hmm. a powerful or a enthusiastic advocate in mm-hmm. your agent. So if someone, though, does manage to get the coverage, whatever age they are, but especially if they're, say, 70 years old, they got the coverage. Now, are they assured that they can keep that coverage? Do they have to requalify?
Typically, most plans, it's not that you have to requalify. As long as you're paying your premium, it's guaranteed renewable.
Guaranteed renewable.
Mm-hmm.
And the premium, though, is not a fixed premium, like, for example, the analogy to permanent insurance, where you have a level premium over
right.
time.
And that's why it's important to look at rate increases over time with the companies and with that age band that you're in, the classification that you're in. How often is that rated up to where they're going to receive a letter stating that their policy is now at a new rate?
So what do you suggest in terms of the amount of coverage that it would be sound judgment for them to shoot for in their policy, the amount that they should be covered, both institutional as well as at home? What would you suggest as a number?
Well, it's interesting. 20 years ago, we used to have unlimited plans that you could have lifetime coverage. And there's one way to get that now, but it's not through traditional long-term care insurance. It's through a product that is a merge of life insurance and long-term care together. So it depends on if that person is looking for traditional long-term care and what experiences their family has had. That's a very telltale sign. Wouldn't you agree, Carrie?
Absolutely.
And so even if I am asking the question or Carrie's asking the question, do you have Alzheimer's in your family? Do you have dementia in your family? Have you had a chronic illness in the family with cancer? Or has there been stroke or heart attack? That's a pretty good indicator what their propensity is going to be for those illnesses. And then we plan accordingly. Of course, we use the statistics that someone who is, well, you just said at the break, Carrie, over the age of 65, you have a 68%, Susan? Is that what you...
I read in doing research for this, there's a 68% chance if you're over 65 that you will need long-term care insurance.
Mm-hmm.
For some period of time.
Mm-hmm. For 3 years or more.
Right. They used to say, AARP used to say 2.8 years, but here's the kicker. Most people, when they go into assisted living, they might have been at home, and then because of that socialization, because we're all social animals, as they say, for humans, and we like to be around people, their health can go up on an upsurge. And so there's no really way to predict how long you're going to be in a facility now, because assisted living is still considered facility care. Mm-hmm. So
let's touch on that while we're talking. So assisted living, a good insurance policy will pay for you to be in assisted living as well. Is that correct?
That's yes. Correct.
So people who are listening should be sure that this is not simply something, a certain amount is available at home, a certain amount is available in a standard special skilled care facility, but also in assisted living.
Right. And so you could have a policy that would be in-home health care, assisted living, nursing home care. And then there's also policies that say anything that comes in the future. Who knows what the future may be? As I shared with my dad, you know, we could put the pod in the backyard, Dad. And he said, no, thanks.
Well, yeah, you're right. There is a big unknown here.
So can I interrupt 1 second? Just to clarify, there is one policy that will cover all of those?
Yes.
Is that what I understood you to
yes.
say?
Yes. Okay. And there's a policy also for a couple that can share those benefits together. And they can, as Carrie has said so eloquently at times, she said, if one has a 5-year plan and another one has a 5-year plan, then you can dip into the other's plan as long as you leave a year there. That's just one model. And so depending upon what the propensity of risk is for that couple, then that might be the appropriate plan.
So almost like when you have life insurance, you can have second to die or first to die.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I can see an argument where there'd be some parallels in terms of long-term care. So I'm still pressing you. What do you suggest then to your clients whenever they're saying, okay, how much insurance should I buy? So do you tell them to base it upon $10,000 a month now, which is a very nice facility? And are we have, what, another minute? Okay. So there has to be a quick answer.
The answer is cover the average risk first. And start the process to see that you can get approved.
Okay. Boy, we could have this conversation a lot longer, couldn't we? Time has flown. We reintroduce our guests, Susan, real quickly, and a way to contact them.
Our guests today have been Diane Finisteed and her teammate, Carrie Gormley. And the best way to get in touch with them is DianeInsureSTL.com. That's D-I-A-N-E. InsuredSTL.com.
Insurance STL.
Insurance. I'm sorry. I'm reading it wrong.
DianeInsureSTL.com.
Okay.
Wrote it down right and said it wrong.
Wonderful information. Wonderful information. We appreciate you being on. This has been another episode of Elder Talk. And till next week, take care.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.